Labor and Commerce Committee to order. It's 3:27 p.m. on Friday, May 10th. Members present are Representative Hannon, Representative Rivak, Representative Tallarico, Representative Stutes, Representative Story, myself, Chair Wool. Also like to thank Committee 8 Ashley Strauch and supporting staff Sophia Tenney from the House Secretary and Nate Williams from the LIO Moderator. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have on our agenda today, we'll start with a second hearing at HB 127 on dental examiners from Representative Sponholz, and we'll take up HB 93 on military spouse courtesy licenses from Representative Tuck for a first hearing. Finally, we'll hear HB 113 from Representative Jackson on a military spouse licensing issue as well, I believe. Our first bill is HB 127. And we will be taking public testimony and holding this bill. I will note that we have the following people online for questions as well. Royanne Royer, Melissa Davis, and John Zazada. And we will start with HB 127. We've heard the bill already. Any questions from committee members? I'm going to open it up for public testimony. And anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing and hearing none. No one on the line for public testimony? Someone coming in right now? Online?
Yes.
Okay. Jeff Kilgore in Fairbanks. Jeff, are you there?
I am. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Could you name and affiliation, if any, and then your testimony?
Yeah, my name is Dr. Jeff Kilgore. I'm a dentist in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm calling in just to support HB 127.
Thank you. Do you have any other supporting testimony or just that you support the bill?
Yeah, so quickly. So for the first 8 years of my career, I worked at a federally qualified health center, and for much of that time I was their dental director. And for the past 3 years, I operate in the private sector now. But in both areas, I've seen firsthand how important access to care is and how challenging access to care can be, especially with the elderly population and the disabled. It's very, very challenging to get specifically those two populations into a traditional dental setting, and having a more non-traditional setting such as going to these homes or going to these residences would not only improve their dental health, but their overall systemic health as well. That's why I think this bill is so important, not only to our patients, but to the community as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I'll note that we're joined by Representative Fields, just at 3:30. Next up from Fairbanks, we have Cheryl Kilgore.
Yes, thank you for taking our call. And yes, I am Dr. Kilgore's mother. you know, we in Fairbanks we like to grow our own.
I figured you were related. I wasn't going to try to guess how, but thank you for clearing that up.
So I have been in healthcare for. In between the state of Alaska Public Health and health for nonprofit health for almost, many decades. And I've seen healthcare delivered in amazing ways, and I've seen access problems. And one of the things that I love about this bill is that hygienists are uniquely qualified through their skill set to provide preventive and some interventive services that would be very beneficial to people in vulnerable populations, like seniors in nursing homes, even seniors in senior centers, disabled people. And as I look at this bill, really what they're trying to do is utilize that unique skill set to take better care of all the people that live in our community. And whereas as health centers and as private practice and nonprofits across the state, we try to do a very good comprehensive job. There are some unique kinds of circumstances where having people go out into the settings themselves would actually be a better delivery model. And so I would urge you to support this bill, and I thank you for taking the time to allow me to testify.
Thank you, Cheryl, for calling in. Are you related to Chris Kilgore?
No, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Are you related to Chris Kilgore?
No, okay. No. He's the other family in Fairbanks, okay. Kilgore.
All right, just checking. Thank you.
Next. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. We have, I don't know, if is Roy-Ann for testimony, it says yes, or for questions? Testimony. Roy-Ann, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
It's Roy-Ann, R-O-Y, Roy-Ann Royer.
Yes. Can you state your affiliation and your testimony?
Sure. My affiliation is myself. I've been in many different arenas in the dental field, but myself, and I'm from Anchorage, Alaska.
Thank you. And do you have testimony for the committee?
Sure. I'm sorry, I just didn't know if you were ready.
Yep. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah.
Roy-Ann, are you on a speakerphone?
Yes, I am.
If you could go to handheld, that would be helpful for us.
Okay. Okay, can you hear me better now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, sure. I've worked in private practice. I've worked in public health education. I've been an instructor for 20 years at UAA in the dental program.
You know, Roy-Ann, maybe speaker was better.
Oh.
I got worse for some reason, yeah.
Okay.
We'll try it again.
Okay, how about now?
Sure.
Okay. So anyway, I think you probably heard I've been involved in many different organizations, including UAA, previous state dental member, et cetera. And I'm currently working in a collaborative agreement at a long-term care center here in Anchorage. And that's why I really would like to provide support for HB 127. From my experiences, I have no doubt that high dentists with 4,000 hours of experience besides myself have the education and skills needed to provide hygiene services to patients as an advanced practitioner and then referring the patients to a dentist after completion of hygiene treatment. Working in this collaborative agreement has really been a very positive experience, and it's working really well at this long-term care facility. However, if the dentist who I work for or with provides this oversight and who is providing this oversight would decide to end the agreement, maybe, you know, due to sickness, retirement, whatever, the clinic and the services that are now an established part of this facility would have to close. And the residents of the facility would no longer be able to get the preventive services, and they've had a significant positive impact on their overall health in this facility. But if HB 127 is passed, then I would be able to continue the preventive services and then just refer residents to a dentist. I mean, obviously, I would try to get dentists back in there, but it would still allow me time to do this and to find a dentist or several dentists to work with for these services. So I've heard from several high dentists who tried to develop a collaborative agreement to provide services to the populations listed in this legislation, but they haven't been as fortunate as I have to find a dentist for this collaboration. So I believe this bill would provide opportunities for expansion of services in these areas of need. I guess would initiate the programs, but I think it would automatically evolve into more than just preventive services, and those are very important by themselves. But I think it would bring dentists into the arena as they collaborate with the referral hygienist. So just for your information, maybe something else to look at in background, the development of the Dental Hygiene Professional Practice Index in 2001, and this is from the Center for Health Workforce Studies, allows scope of practice comparisons across states. So in 2015, researchers completed an analysis to determine whether broader dental hygienist scope of practice impacted oral health outcomes in a state, and they found that the broader dental hygienist scope of practice did have a positive and significantly associated with better oral health outcomes in the state. So this index is available for policymakers like yourself to help substantiate that this legislation does have a positive impact and is worth taking the step for improving access to dental care and improving oral health in underserved populations. So I would encourage this committee to approve HB 177, and thank you so much for your time today to listen to me.
Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for calling in. Next, we have John Zazada.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman Wall and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Zazada, and I'm the policy director of the Alaska Primary Care Association. We support the operations and development of Alaska's 27 community health center organizations. Together with the leaders of our organizations, we support HB 127, recruiting and retaining the workforce necessary to staff comprehensive primary care practices that provide dental, medical, behavioral health, and coordination of care services to our patients is the number one concern and priority of our leaders. Through the years, we've been pioneers in supporting and incorporating the expansion of new provider types in our practices. The dental hygienist advanced practitioner will join fellow professionals that include physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and licensed clinical social workers to provide high-quality, cost-effective care to the patients that we serve. All of our health centers are required to provide oral health services as a component of the comprehensive medical, dental, behavioral health, pharmacy, and care coordination services that we offer. Dental services and overall oral health are vital components in the whole-person care that we are required to provide. Many health centers offer on-site dental services provided by staff, or they contract them with other community organizations. Other more rural and smaller sites rely on sending patients to larger health facilities or neighboring urban community health centers for dental care. The most frequently cited reason for this is the shortage of dental services is the lack of providers. In 2018, almost 38,000 Alaskans received their dental care in Alaska health centers. Those almost 100,000 visits were provided by 77 full-time dentists, hygienists, and dental therapists. For the last several years, oral health has been one of the fastest-growing areas of care provided by health centers in Alaska. Persistent shortages of providers at all levels result in providers not working at their highest level of licensure. This creates inefficiency, decreases provider satisfaction, and increases or decreases retention and creates barriers to care that patients that affect patients. The addition of advanced hygienists to practices would add an additional valuable layer of staffing between dentists and other hygienists and dental therapists to provide comprehensive services and support integration with other health center programs. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today, and we wholeheartedly support HB 127. Thanks very much.
Thank you, John. Next, we have David Nielsen.
Yeah, hi. Sorry. This is Dr. Nielsen with the State Dental Board, and I was actually calling in with if you had questions. I did not have any prepared testimony. And so maybe they didn't get that exactly right. But if you have any questions during this, I'm happy to answer.
Okay.
Try to answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Nielsen.
Okay.
And I believe as far as testimony goes, that's all we have online. Anyone in the room? think I asked that already. No. Any questions from the committee? Representative Story.
Yes, I had a question for the dentist from the Dental Review Board. And that is, in the bill, it says the board may issue an advance practice permit to a licensed dental hygienist. So that leads me to believe that you also may not. How do you go about evaluating that?
Well, at this point, depending on what the legislation says now, it is pretty much be if somebody has over 4,000 hours of clinical practice and probably no disciplinary actions or anything like that. That'd pretty much be it. So they'd have to be, you know, have an active license in Alaska, and they'd have to have no disciplinary actions or anything like that pending, and they just have to have 4,000 hours of documented practice. That's pretty much what would be the requirement.
Thank you.
Representative Hanton.
Thank you. Since we started down that road, through the chair, what would you anticipate, how many years would it take for a dental hygienist to get 4,000 hours?
Through the chair, it's hard for me to estimate that. I imagine that that Roy Ann Royer would be able to predict that easier. I really would be hard for me to say, but I'd imagine it would be 5 to 10 years, something like that. I don't know. She could probably answer better than me.
Okay, we'll ask Roy Ann. A 40-hour work week would be 2 years.
Most of them don't work
a
40-hour.
Okay.
And they don't
work. Roy Ann, are you there?
And they're not all clinical hours.
I got it.
Yes, I am. Yes, I would agree probably at least five years.
Thank you. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, through the chair. I don't see a letter here from the State Dental Association. Do they support this bill?
I believe they do. Dr. Nielsen, are you with the State Dental Board, it looks like?
I had a hard time hearing the question. Sorry, through the chair. Could you repeat the question?
Does the State Board and the State Dental Association support this bill? I don't seem to have a letter of support from them, or I don't see one.
We have.
Alaska Dental Society.
Representative Rebeck.
I just wanted to suggest that we have the sponsor here.
Yep. I was. Representative Sponholz.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'll let the representative of the board speak for the board, but the Alaska Dental Society is the state professional association for dentists, and they have written a letter of support. Oh. It's signed by Mr. Logan.
I did see that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, there it is, right there.
Yeah, right in front.
Thank you, Representative Sponholz. Any other questions for the bill sponsor or any of the testifiers? Seeing and hearing none. I'm told we're going to hold this bill for now. There's a CS coming. It's not here yet.
I have a question.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is for the sponsor. I see that the Alaska Dental Society made a suggestion in wording. Was that corrected in the CS?
Representative Stutz, to the chairman, invite Bernice Nesbitt up to speak to the changes we're working on.
Thank you. For the record, this is Bernice Nesbitt, staff to Representative Ivy Sponholz. So the CS that we're working on will include the changes that are listed in the letter that you have in your bill packet.
Thank you.
We'd hoped to have it for today's committee, but it wasn't ready back from legal in time.
Understand.
Mm-hmm. They're busy.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Sponholz and staff. And we will be holding this bill, awaiting a CS. And we've heard some support from dental hygienists and dentists and primary care people. So with that, we'll hold it aside. We'll move on to our next bill on our agenda, which is, let me close public testimony first. Testimony is closed. And next, we will move to HB 93. Brief at ease. Back to order. Staff to Representative Tuck is here to start the bill presentation.
If you could, there you go.
identify yourself and...
Right. Thank you so much. My name is Mike Mason. I'm staff to Representative Chris Tuck, and he should be joining us momentarily. On the line, we should have Tammy Perot. She's the Northwest Region Liaison with the Defense State Liaison's Office, and she'll be available for questions. This is a priority for the U.S. Defense Department. Also, we have Sarah Chambers, the Director of the Alaska Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing, available for questions as well. This bill is kind of builds on the social contract that we all live by, and I think I will turn it over to Representative Tuck. We just started.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Representative Chris Tuck, and thank you for taking up House Bill 93 today. Yes, this is this bill right here is basically looking at to see where we're at with the temporary courtesy occupational licenses for spouses. And it's an important tool to allow military spouses to go to work quickly after relocating to Alaska. I want to point out that just recently the White House held a summit on military spouse employment concerns. Karen Pence, who is the wife of Vice President Mike Pence, told a group of military spouses that the White House is going to do a series of efforts to highlight military spouse employment challenges. And in speaking with a group of several hundred spouses of the Armed Forces Insurance Military Spouse of the Year Town Hall, she said she actually used the term home front heroes. And so that's the new campaign on nationwide trying to make sure that spouses have full employment. Why is this important? Because military families are uprooted. They're moved from one state to another state, and oftentimes their occupational license do not travel with them. And because of that, they end up taking jobs that are not in their career field, making less income than they normally would be for their families, and not really providing the services for our communities when they get here with the skills that they have. They estimate that military spouse unemployment rate range from about 16% to 24% nationwide because of this problem. And so Donald Trump, President Trump, has issued an executive order directing federal agencies to increase military spouse hiring. And the White House has also backed programs to assist spouses with transferring professional licenses across state lines in an effort to previously championed by officials with former President Barack Obama doing his Joining Forces initiative. So we had passed a bill years ago to look at the military families and the spouses and being able to get their licenses quicker here in the state of Alaska. What this bill does is it simply is checking in with Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development to see what the status is of that and to give an annual report to the legislature. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for the bill? Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the speaker, I see that in the regulations, a temporary license is issued for 180 days. And can you tell me, is there a fee for the issuance of that temporary license or only the full fees for their permanent Alaska professional license?
And if I may, Mr. Chair, I believe that Sarah Chambers is online available
right
for that.
Exactly.
Oh, it's just you. Hello, Ms. Chambers. How are you doing? So she'll be able to answer the questions for us. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, for the programs that do offer a temporary license, there's a specific fee for that temporary license. So it would be specified as something that's different than the full license.
Follow up.
Do we allow that fee to be used towards the state cost of their permanent professional license and whatever chosen fees, which are going to vary depending on what your licensure you're seeking?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, with 43 separate programs with separate statutes and separate regulations, and 22 different governing bodies among those, that's not consistent across all programs. Many programs do nursing, for example, applies that temporary license because they consider it, to, the Board of Nursing considers it to be a phase one of getting your full license. There are other programs that do that as well. Some programs offer a temporary license that is separate from a full license, and some programs don't offer a temporary license at all. Part of that could be that the board hasn't made that a priority, and part of it is that it would take longer to do that than to just go ahead and get your full license, because the requirements for certain licenses are pretty straightforward. Temporary license is not going to gain you anything. So that's there are a variety of answers because we have a variety of programs. If I may, one of the elements that is lacking in statute that I've spoken in other committees about is the need to beef up the military spouse licensing language to compel the various boards to do more and to take this issue a little bit more more seriously. And that is, in my opinion and in the administration's opinion, currently lacking. So that's why there's a little bit of, there's some holes along the way.
Thank you. Through the chair. So do you find that for the areas where we do currently have temporary licensure, that that 6-month, 180-day window allows, affords them enough time to complete the Alaska licensure process? And I guess my area of expertise is teacher certification. And I know that to get a full license in Alaska, you have to take your Alaska History, Alaska Studies course. But I could envision that your certification from another state gets you the temporary license. You probably have the most expertise in knowing, do we get most of the people who've applied for temporary licenses to that finish line in that 180 days to get their full professional licensure in that wide-ranging labor pool?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we have fewer than 30 military spouses who've ever applied using this program. So we have very little data. In the conversations that I've had, which are extensive with various stakeholders, other state agencies, representatives of the military, we believe the need is greater, but that, again, there's a gap in perception, there's a gap in education. They don't know this is available. So we're trying to, outside of the statutory process, bridge those gaps. But with so few numbers, fewer than 1/100th of a percent of our applicants have ever used this program. So
okay.
I wish I were more of an expert on that answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to point out that the bill does primarily three things. The first is to do that annual report that I mentioned earlier. But it's also calls on the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development to produce and distribute informational materials. So that will hopefully help us out in making that, bridging that gap together. And then also specifically to the boards. And in the bill on the last page, page 2, lines 13 through 16 is asking for the professional licensing boards to designate a single employee to serve as the point of contact for public information and inquiries related to temporary courtesy licenses for military spouses. And so so hopefully through that, we will be able to bring it all together.
Thank you. Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair. Could this bill have any impact on licensure for plumbers or electricians?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, this is Representative Tuck again. Yes, be through the Department of Labor, and Department of Labor would have to come up with potentially a temporary license, or looking at compacts with other states to reciprocate. So let me give you an example. The state of Alaska, we kind of relaxed our licensing requirements for electrical licenses. Therefore, Washington State no longer accepts our license if you were to work down in Washington State. And in retaliation, the state of Alaska no longer accepts Washington's license because there's not that reciprocating agreement. It used to be a reciprocating agreement when we had stronger standards. So if someone were to come up here and work in Washington, The vision of the bill that was passed in 2011 would be, that was House Bill 262. I'm sorry, I don't remember what the bill number was, but it was passed in 2011 would be that, yes, they would be able to do a temporary license if they're ever licensed in another state. For example, it may have not have worked. California had recently passed a licensing requirement. If they did not have a license, then I'm not sure that that the bill that was passed in 2011 will allow someone to work in the electrical industry without being in a registered apprenticeship program.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up.
So, I mean, most plumbers and electricians go through a four-year registered apprenticeship. How would it work if a plumber moved up here who had not done a registered apprenticeship in some other state and wanted to get permanently licensed? Obviously, 6 months is not enough to go through a four-year registered apprenticeship. How's that going to work in terms of timing?
And through the chair,
does this bill apply to these kind of licenses?
Well, I don't. I mean, sounds like it does.
It does.
It does not.
It does not, says.
Oh, it's only professional licensing, huh?
This is professional licensing.
Oh, it doesn't affect these trades. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about this, but.
Got it. Sorry.
This bill doesn't really pertain to that.
Maybe I misunderstood the first answer. I was. Yeah. First wanted to see, did it apply? And if it doesn't, then I have no problems with it.
I guess along that line of questioning, do we have reciprocity with professional licensing with other states?
Mr. Chairman, we have only one firm reciprocity agreement, which is mandated by the federal government for real estate appraisers. We don't have a stated, you know, if you have one in the state, you get automatic licensure in our state, but we do have licensure by credential for almost all of our programs, which means that if you have a similar license in another state, then you can come into Alaska and use those credentials to gain licensure without having to take another national exam. We have that for almost all of our programs. It's sort of reciprocity light.
And how would this doesn't these that's different than what we're dealing with here. This is a temporary license, but if someone came in with was credentialed in another state with, well, I'll use dental hygienist for an example, they wouldn't have to retake an exam. But with this, not let's say this bill, but the intent of this bill is to expedite licensure above and beyond simple omission of the board exam. Is that correct?
So, Mr. Chairman, the current law that Representative Tuck mentioned that's been on the books for several years says that the department and the boards may issue a temporary license to a spouse of an active duty military member who, to sum it up, basically has an equivalent license in another state, and they can get a 180-day license. That's the current law. This bill just requires us to file a report and provide more information. It doesn't change licensure in any way. So there's no impact to the credentials and the criteria and the reciprocity. It's just beefing up our administration and reporting back to the legislature so you have better tools to understand the scope of the problem.
And if I may, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Let me just, and thank you, Ms. Chambers, because that is the clarification right there. This is only to improve our licensing boards and licensing process and the application process and making sure that we have the best practices in place to be able to provide the applicant the support. And so this is basically just reporting, just kind of put more focus on trying to basically get these temporary licenses and get people to be able to work in their fields of trade when they're licensed from another state.
So it's an encouragement bill to help the people and boards, as you said earlier, to compel them, however that works. And then we get a report to see how much compelling is going on, I guess.
Okay. Exactly.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Rebeck, sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, thank you to Representative Tuck. I really appreciate the intent of this legislation. For about a decade, I've heard of the licensing issues. Military spouses, they travel from state to state every couple of years, and in every state they have problems. Military is obviously a very big part of our economy and our communities here in Alaska. The more we can do to benefit their spouses. And I don't know if that was a coincidence or not, but today just happens to be National Military Spouses Appreciation Day. And so it's especially heartwarming to see this type of legislation here in front of us, and I just wanted to thank you for it.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Story.
Yes, I'm not sure if I heard this correctly or not, but at the beginning of your testimony, I thought you said most people do not apply for a temporary license because they want to start the regular licensing process right away. Could you clarify that?
Sure. Please. Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Story, we have so many different licensing programs in our division that they're all a little different. And some of our licensing programs offer a temporary license as a foot in the door, so they can go ahead and start working in the state of Alaska while they complete certain Alaska-specific requirements. And that's sort of a win-win for everybody. Some don't apply for a temporary license because it's really fast and easy to get a regular license. For example, if you're coming in as a manicurist, the requirement is 12 hours of experience, and you check some boxes and pay a fee, and it's faster to not get a temporary license. But we do have a very, very, very small number of military spouses who have actually taken advantage of the program that's in place now, and we're looking to do a sort of a gap analysis to find out what's the scope of the problem. We know there is one, and how do we best meet their needs?
Thank you for clarifying.
Ms. Chambers, I recall a reciprocity program for medical doctors. Am I mistaken?
Mr. Chairman, there is an interstate licensure compact that Representative Seaton introduced a few years ago. There are a handful of national compacts, which are private agreements that have a state makes with a private company, a private organization, and that goes into statute that allows interstate licensure. Nurses, medical doctors, and a few others have those.
So would that qualify for reciprocity if a nurse from a certain state that they were in the compact, they wouldn't, would they get automatic licensure in Alaska and they wouldn't have to? How does that work exactly?
Mr. Chairman, essentially, most of the compacts have, if you have a national compact recognition, then you can move into another state and start working. They're all different. They're all private organizations, and so they each have their own language and fees and trappings and so forth. But that's essentially the concept.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the bill sponsor or Ms. Chambers? Or seeing and hearing none. Thank you both. We will set this bill aside for now and
thank you very much.
Resume shortly. Yes, thank you. Yes. Thank you, Representative Tuck. We got one more bill on the agenda today, HB 113. This is our first hearing on this bill. Representative Jackson and her staff, Eric Cordero, will join us. We also have Verdi Bowen from MLVA and Terry Gales from the Department of Labor available to answer questions. Verdi's with DMV, Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Yeah. Representative Jackson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill on such a special day. For the record, I am Representative Sharon Jackson, House District 13. Before you is a House Bill 113, a bill that I refer to as Blue Star, Gold Star Families Act of 2019. The purpose of House Bill 113 is to extend existing hiring preferences for veterans and members of the National Guard to include Blue Star families, which are spouses and dependents of active service members, and Gold Star families, spouses and dependents of service members that died while in service. Data from the Department of Defense and the Office of the President shows that military spouses are amongst the highest unemployed and underemployed when compared to civilian families. Your packets contain research documents and a letter from DOD dated February 2018 asking states to take steps to assist military spouses' independence. Mr. Chairman, Alaska is home to thousands of veterans, members of the National Guard and military families. Spouses make up about 2% of the state's population, and 9 out of 10 are women. Military spouses and their families sacrifice just as much as the service member. I had the honor to meet with military spouses at J-Bear last month, and they shared these concerns with me, from unintended biases to not being able to get interviews due to gaps in their resumes. Research indicates 40% of military spouses have a college education, and the majority work in professions covering areas of health care, dental care, education, and child care. Through HB 113, Alaska will join 24 other states to extend hiring preferences benefits to military families. This is an opportunity for our state to have a larger pool of professionals in areas where we have trouble filling the gaps. This will also empower our economy, and it's a way of honoring the spouses of those that served our country. My staff, Eric Cadero, is here to go over the summary changes and the sectional analysis. We are very happy to answer your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jackson. Mr. Cordero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Eric Cordero, staff to Representative Sharon Jackson. I appreciate the committee's allowance to let us present today. So the summary of the changes from the first bill to the bill that came out of the Military and Veteran Affairs Committee, it was clarified that active duty service members and their spouses and dependents qualify for hiring preferences. Stepchildren were added to the definition of dependents.
Stepchildren.
Oh, stepchildren.
I'm
yes.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Okay.
Oh, I apologize.
Thank you.
The CS also added definitions to the State Personnel Act in sections 3 for consistency and remove redundant language in other sections. Another change was adding the words disabled veteran to section 4 for consistency with federal definitions. And another change was to clarify that House Bill 113 should not be interpreted to amend the terms of a collective bargaining agreement. So, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I can go through the sectional really quickly, or unless you have
questions from the committee. Seeing and hearing none. Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Section 1 of the bill does not prohibit a private employer from having hiring preferences for persons describing Sections 2 of this bill. Section 2 repeals and reenacts current statutes by adding definitions removed from Section 1 for clarity. This section does not prohibit a private employer from having hiring preferences to active military veterans and families. The addition is adding families. The current statute already has veterans and members of the National Guard.
So, if I may interrupt.
Yes.
So, what the bill is saying is that it doesn't mandate that there's a preference, but it says if a private company has a preference, that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm just not familiar with kind of state law and hiring preferences. What does a preference mean? Does it mean if you have two equally situated people, you can choose one? Does it mean you can choose someone who maybe is less qualified? But
thank you.
How does that work? Thank you.
Through the chair, right now, veterans have preference points if they work for the federal government. To give you an example, if you're disabled, you may have 5%. Depending on the level of your disability, it can rise. So the state uses, and some private businesses use, a point system when they hire. So say, for example, 50 points is the best candidate. For one, what this bill will do is prevent them from tossing aside this valuable, you know, person with qualifications and interview them. So with this, the average is a 5-point preference, unless the service member died during service, then there's a 10% preference. So this just adds 5 points or 10 points through the full hiring process.
And through the chairs, Representative Fields, so the state of Alaska uses different tools when they make a determination on hiring. So as Representative Jackson said, if there is a numerical tool being used, veterans, members of the National Guard automatically get 10 points. But they only get those points once they pass the minimum requirements to be able to qualify for that position. Yeah. So if the other tool that the state uses is, if they do not use a numerical tool when making those hiring determinations, the benefit to veterans and members of the National Guard is to have an interview.
Okay, thank you.
So the points won't put them from ineligible to eligible, but once they're eligible, they can add the points, and then when compared to another eligible candidate, it may put them ahead, and I don't know if people decide on just the points. Maybe there's other parameters, but
yes, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. For the record, Eric Cordero, staff to Representative Jackson. I believe I'm in Section 3. Section 3 amends the State Personnel Act to reference definitions and stated in Section 4. And Section 4 amends the employment preference for veterans or former prisoners of war by adding language to include families of active duty service member, veterans or former prisoner of wars, and it clarifies the type of preference given the hiring process used and whether the applicant is disabled or not. Section B is just simply removed for consistency. Section 5 is what we were talking about just now. It clarifies that a person may receive employment preference under only one of the categories described in Section 3 and 4, and that's either the point or the interview system, but not both. A person may use the preference without limitation when being considered for a position for which persons who are not currently state employees are being considered. So if an opening happens in the State Department, but it's only open to state employees, nothing in this bill changes that. It's still just open for state employees. So if the recruitment for a position is limited to state employees, preference under A and C of the sections may not be counted. Section 6 clarifies that this bill does not involve interpreting amendments of a collective bargaining agreement and makes a reference to subsection A and 4. So this bill doesn't change anything that has already been agreed upon. Section 7 was changed to make sure that we had the correct definitions of a dependent child. And as mentioned before, one of the changes was to make sure that stepchildren were included in that definition. And Section 8 simply removes language that has become now redundant through the other sections of the bill. And that's the sectional, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Hannon?
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you. You came to meet with me ahead of time, and so I had some questions then, and ones occurred to me subsequently. And I completely understand active duty families. That's pretty easy to define, the IDs. Everybody, you know, if you're active duty, you know you're active duty. The preference for a surviving spouse, and I am wondering if you had a vision of how long that preference is there. 10 years? 20 years, is that a lifetime benefit for that surviving spouse?
Through the chair, the first portion of your question If a service member serve when they get out, for example, the Army has the DD-214. The spouse and dependents are listed on that. So that is a source of proof that this is a military spouse. And once you have the preference points, you always have the preference points. So say if I got a job here and I leave and receive a position because we're relocated, my preference point is a permanent preference.
I'm going to follow it up because I didn't communicate my question correctly, which is, let's presume your spouse died in active duty and you were a young widow at 20. Is this preference that we're giving because you are the surviving spouse of a member who died at duty, is that benefit to her given 20 years later, 30 years later? Or is it, what was your vision for that? Because, of course, we could have some very young spouses whose active duty partner died when they were 20 or 21, and this could be a 50-year benefit. The active duty benefit's pretty clear in its scope of length.
That, through the chair, Representative Cannon, you are correct. Right now, there is no limitation, but in current we have other statutes that provide services to spouses that do not are not in reference to employment preferences, but to employment services, such as providing military spouses with support with resume building and things like that. I would have to defer to someone from the Department of Labor to answer the more technical questions, but right now with this bill, there is no limit as to how long those benefits stay. Right now, it's assumed that it's for the length of that person's life.
We have Terry Gales online from Department of Labor.
Yes, this is Terry Gales, Department of Labor. Can you repeat the question?
Thank you, through the chair. Well, my question was about how long, so the bill addresses two categories of military spouses and family members that would be given this preference. One are active duty families, and that's pretty clearly defined when you're in active duty or not in active duty. The second category is deceased surviving dependents and spouses. So your spouse died while on duty. How long would that preference for spousal preference last?
Through the chair, once again, this is Tariq Gales with Labor Standards and Safety. In the bill, it looks like it's permanent. There's no end date to that.
Representative Reback?
I don't know if this is the correct time, Mr. Chairman, to talk. I had a question for DMVA. Is this a good time, or should I wait?
Sure. Verdi Bowen's on the line. Verdi?
Yes, this is Verdi Bowen, the Director of Veterans Affairs. I'm on the line.
Thanks. Through the chair, Mr. Bowen, are you I'm curious about, does the department have a position on this bill, first of all, and second, I was wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit to the unemployment rates in the veteran community and spousal community, if you know that. If I remember right, you guys track those?
Through the chair to Representative Reback, the DMVA is in full support of this bill. And as far as the unemployment rates, I know currently right now that the unemployment rate for the veterans in the state is exactly the same as non-veterans. Now, as far as the spouses go of active duty military, it's generally much higher than it is for those that do not serve, but I don't have those numbers because those aren't tracked individually. I hope that helps.
It does, thank you.
Representative Fields.
Thanks, and I guess this could be a question for the sponsor or maybe Mr. Bowen, not sure. I know a lot of states have policies like this, and I guess my question is the nature of the preference for state employment typically put into place through statute, or is it typically put into place through regulation, where the legislature would pass a more general statute and kind of enable the Department of Administration to promulgate regs on exactly what type of preference is given, if you know? Thanks.
Well, right now it is in statutes. What we are doing is adding the spouse and dependent children to the statutes that already exist.
Through the chair, Representative Fields, and in the research that we've done, most states, when they're talking about state employment, they're in statute. The federal government, they have their own regulations.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you. And, yeah, I see we've already, the legislature already did the 5% of the points and structure, and I was just curious kind of how that compared to other states, so thank you.
You have a question? Representative Story.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it is perfect that we're doing this on this day. I was saying that I have a current bill that is passing through the Senate right now about, because currently we give preference to veterans. I mean, this, my bill is about relevant work experience being able to be counted. And dealing with the Division of Personnel, they said we were not using points. So I need some clarification of that. And I was just texting my staff, which I know is not good, but just to verify that. And I don't know if federally we are doing, I know you said we're doing points, but currently they're giving preferences but not doing points. So I was just wondering for some clarification of that, or I know we could talk to personnel and perhaps they could clarify it at some point.
Thank you. Through the chair, Rep. Story, that's a very good question, and thank you for what you're doing there. I would say this is two separate categories, and they will work together. Sure. Because one thing is when I am a veteran as well as a spouse, okay? So what is really empowering about this is when the wives are able to work, especially in their educated fields, they're happy, and it takes less stress off of them as well as the service member. But what's really nice is when the wife is working and happy in her career, and it's time for the military spouse to get out of the service, they would think twice before leaving because she is situated and able. So, and what you're doing, which is beautiful, is like a translation from what the military may call an MOS, which is a professional title, to the civilian language. So, yeah, there's no points required for that. However, it will come in handy depending on the status and how the military active duty.
Yeah. Follow up.
Yeah,
I might have confused you. I just was saying when I was just checking on military preference and points, they said we currently didn't do points for that, and so I was just wanting to get that clarified because I didn't know if your bill was adding that we would have points.
Right now on the federal government has preference points. What we're doing here is working to have these points available for the state as well. Yes.
Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I guess I had questions along the same lines as Representative Hannon, and that is the conditions under which a dependent or spouse qualifies. Is that only when the veteran is deceased, and if that happens while he or she is on duty, active, or can it be later? I mean, you know, my father was in the military. He's deceased. Do I get preference? I mean, that was a long time ago.
through the chair, Representative, yes, that would be the case if he died while in service. And if, according to the bill, if the spouse is disabled, then the percentage would be higher. If the tool being used is numerical versus non-numerical, and the non-numerical benefit is that you would get an interview.
Oh, so the non-numerical, if there's not a numerical system like in the state of Alaska,
right,
the benefit is that they get an interview.
Each, I would have to defer to Mr. Gales from the Department of Labor on whether or not each department independently chooses to use a numerical value or not. But according to current statute, if there's no numerical value, then the hiring benefit is assuring an interview if the person at least qualifies for the minimum requirements. So,
and is that's required of a state?
Correct.
But a private would not.
The private sector, it's always voluntary whether or not they want to give hiring preferences.
And Tariq Gales, can you speak to that?
This is Tariq Gales, the Division of Labor Standards and Safety, and through the chair. So the top qualified applicants up to a certain number will be selected for an interview. But a veteran who meets the minimum qualifications, even if they're not the top qualified, will get an interview if they just meet the minimum qualifications.
Thank you. That clarification.
So, yes, and I also wanted to add that the federal government, when giving preference for spouses or widows of veterans who died during service, if the widow remarries, they no longer get those that benefit.
And what about the dependents? They have the benefit for life?
They have the benefit for life. Yes, correct.
So if a child is 12 and they're
paying. 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, once the dependent is an adult and they marry, then it's the same result. They lose the benefit.
Once they marry as an adult.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
There's an age.
There's an age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not just marriage, it's age as well. Can someone speak to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So right now, it's as long as the child is at home or in college, which I think the age is 23 years old.
Yep, I see it now, 19 or 23 and registered and attending a full-time basis. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Rivak.
I just have a comment. Proud to be a co-sponsor of this bill. I want to thank Representative Jackson, and I'll just say that I've had the real unfortunate experience of having several friends with spouses lose their lives while in service to our country, and I've had the very, very unfortunate experience of consoling their spouses, and often, too often, their children, their young children. And I was wounded in Iraq 12 years ago at the same time many of my friends were killed, and I still talk to many of their families. I keep up with their children, and I can tell you that as far as the timeline goes, for a lot of them, it doesn't really get better. And they, you know, I can tell you it's hard for those folks, and they sacrifice a lot for us, and so any little bit we can do for them, I'm supportive of, and I just wanted to thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Yes, and I've been doing a lot of research and thinking a lot about veterans, and it really is true. The stress of not having employment is one of the biggest hurdles that family members face, and so it is definitely. I appreciate this bill and the intent behind it.
I'm now just going to ask about versions of the bill because I have a version in front of me that does not show Representative Rivak as a co-sponsor. and I'm wondering if I don't have the most current version. Mine shows Jackson and Shaw and is a military and an MLV committee substitute. Is there a more current?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, this is the current version of the bill. Representative Rivak co-sponsored the bill right after we sent the materials for your packet.
Okay.
So.
There we go. All right, Emily.
Any questions, comments, anything? Seeing and hearing none, thank you. We will set the bill aside for now. We'll adjourn for the day. Our next meeting will be tomorrow, Saturday, at 3 p.m. in this room. We will hear SB 16 and SB 83, two Senate bills. Amendments on both these bills have been previously announced for 5 p.m. today, which is in 27 minutes. I think we've gotten some already. And it is 4:28, and we are adjourned.